Welcome. This is James Copeland. I'm the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And it's my pleasure to welcome for this podcast the former chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Harvey Pitt, who's going to be talking to us about the current state of corporate governance and shareholder activism related to our proxy monitor project and my forthcoming report. So welcome, Chairman Pitt, and wanted to start off by asking you basically about some of the new evolving corporate governance landscape through Dodd-Frank. You led the Securities and Exchange Commission through what was the last major federal reform of securities law and corporate governance, Sarbanes-Oxley Act in 2002. And now the federal government, with the 2010 Dodd-Frank law, taking an even greater role over corporate law, which was traditionally a state law concern centered in Delaware. So how do you view this evolving corporate governance landscape since you've left the SEC, and what are some of the biggest implications you see flowing from Dodd-Frank?
First of all, it's good to be with you, Jim. And before I answer, I just thought I would mention that I've looked over the Proxy Monitor 2011 report, and it gives a lot of good guidance on where shareholder activism is and what some of the things that people can see evolving out of the first year of experience with provisions of Dodd-Frank. And so I found that a helpful overview of what's going on. But to answer your question, Dodd-Frank makes enormous changes in the whole corporate governance landscape. And it reflects a continuing trend, in my view, by which Congress is slowly but surely moving issues of corporate governance outside the state law arena and into an arena of federal law. And that will create issues for corporations and their advisors simply because it now means that there are even more sources of potential guidelines and requirements that people will have to keep up with. But Dodd-Frank is thought by many to have just dealt with financial institutions and regulatory reform. And of course, in its 2,319 pages, it does deal quite a bit with those subjects. But it also has a lot to say about corporate governance, having a complete section on corporate governance, and the impacts that will be felt by corporations and those who invest in them are not all that obvious just by reading the statute, if anyone has time to read all 2,300 plus pages. I would say some of the major events are there is a real effort in Dodd-Frank to give voice to those who are pursuing what sometimes gets referred to as corporate or shareholder activism. The difficulty with using any label like that is, unfortunately, there are many different types of behavior, and that's another thing, by the way, that your report highlights and why I found it so interesting. But in any event, I think we're seeing issues like say-on-pay, proxy access, the approach of corporations to disclosure to their shareholders and the like. And so the landscape is definitely changing, particularly with a great deal of activism for majority voting and efforts to give shareholders the ability to pick and choose between directors and decide which directors are worthy of continuing in office and the like. So we're seeing a lot of changes. Some of them are governed through disclosure. Some of them are governed through affirmative standards. And the SEC has shown since 2009 a very significant interest in being far more active than it has previously been, and so people can be assured that this trend is only just beginning. We haven't seen it even crest yet.
Well, let's follow up on one of those recent events we saw. You mentioned the notion of voting on directors, and of course the SEC, shortly after Dodd-Frank, came out with its proxy access rule, and as it evolved in the final rulemaking, that would have allowed those shareholders who held 3% of the company's equity for at least 3 years to put their own nominees on the proxy ballot. And of course, just this summer, the D.C. Circuit slapped the SEC down of sorts, rejecting the rule, and found that it was likely to empower special interests. The SEC hadn't adequately considered all the evidence and commentary when it formulated its decision. What's your opinion? It was a divided decision of the SEC, a unanimous decision of the D.C. Circuit. What's your opinion on this proxy access question and what's transpired of late?
Yeah, I think without getting too involved in the subject, all of this stems back to 2005. And it was a point in time when the SEC had proposed a rule that required mutual funds to have independent chairmen, along with some other elements of that. And that was challenged. And the D.C. Circuit, in what I think many people thought was a very favorable decision for the SEC, said, we have no doubt the SEC has this authority, but they haven't considered some alternatives, and we need them to go back and consider the alternatives, including why isn't disclosure that you don't have an independent chairman and why you haven't put one in just as good as requiring an independent chairman. The SEC made an unfortunate decision. They decided that notwithstanding that the Court of Appeals had invited them to go back and do more review and do more exploration of the issue before concluding that this was the way they wanted to go. 10 days after that decision in 2005, the commission voted, again by a 3-2 vote, which was the original vote as well, to reaffirm its prior rule, and some might have said thumb its nose at the Court of Appeals and its desire for commission rulemaking. Since that decision, the commission has basically not won a rulemaking case in the District of Columbia Circuit. And the decision that came down this summer to which you refer, Jim, is an example of the court's concern that the commission did not effectively assess the costs and benefits of its proposed rules. That is clearly something that the commission is obligated to do, although I might point out I testified yesterday before Congress on legislation that would create even more precise directions to the SEC about its analysis of costs and benefits. And the court has struck down a number of rules in succession, and the proxy access rule was the latest one to be struck down. The court demonstrated some significant concerns and problems with the analysis that the commission articulated. In a move that I think reflects great leadership, the chairman of the SEC put out a statement recently that said that the commission had decided not to appeal that decision, but rather to take the time to study the court's decision and some of its others and try to do a much better job with respect to cost-benefit analyses. I think that decision was very prudent. I think it will stand the commission in good stead with the court, but it now leaves open the question of proxy access and the best way for the SEC to deal with that issue. No one should think that they have seen the last of this issue or even the last of commission rulemaking. This will preoccupy the commission, but the commission is charged with adopting over 100 new rules under Dodd-Frank. So I think it may be a while before the commission gets back to proxy access. But at least at the moment, proxy access per se is no longer an issue. That doesn't mean that corporations should assume that the commission doesn't have a view or that the commission staff won't assert interpretive positions that may be different from those people might expect based on prior commission pronouncements.
I guess one of the critiques that the court made on the proxy access question was the potential for special interest capture. And one of the things that came out in my report and my empirical analysis of the data from our Proxy Monitor database was that only 2% of all the shareholder proposals that have been submitted have been sponsored by institutional investors, mutual funds, et cetera, other than institutional investors with a social investing purpose or labor union pension funds. What do you make of that? Because certainly some academic critics have said that the shareholder proposal process generally is subject to interest group capture that may not be interested in share price maximization, but interested in some other goals.
That concern is certainly a fair one, but I have to say I have been following this issue for over 40 years since I first went to work at the SEC as a young lawyer, and one of my original cases was a shareholder proposal case, and it required me to get steeped in all of the background of this. I think that these are evolving trends, and we have seen this previously. When I first started, the general consensus was that shareholder proposals, again, were special interest group oriented, and that they never won. Suddenly, as the years and decades went by, some of these shareholder proposals started getting more votes, and eventually some of them actually won. Most of them are phrased in what is technically called precatory language, which means it's a recommendation to the board to consider it. But one of the other things we have found is that when directors receive a recommendation from shareholders and the recommendation gets a very large percentage of shareholder support, directors ignore that recommendation at their own peril. So while I think that right now we're dealing with things that are largely the province of groups that have special interests or particularized interests, the fact is that there are a lot of people out there who will, once they have enough experience watching others utilize this process, will ultimately wind up deciding that they may want to use this for their own purposes. For example, say on pay or proxy access are issues that could just as easily be used by active institutional shareholders like hedge funds and others that aren't, shall we say, special interest oriented, such as a labor union pension fund, for example, but nonetheless want to use the shareholder proposal mechanism or shareholder voting mechanism as a way of starting to roil the waters in preparation for some potential aggressive move on a company. And so the landscape may well change over time. And in the current situation, one of the best pieces of advice, I guess, that anybody can pursue is that corporate proxy voting is becoming far more analogous to political campaigns and contests. And smart managers will not wait until they need the support of their institutional and other shareholders. They will regularly be touching base with their shareholders, letting them know the steps management is taking in shepherding the company to better performance and things like that. And as they sometimes say in political campaigns, getting out and pressing the flesh. That is something that companies can start to do even now, even though it may not be required, so that they are alerting their shareholders to the fact that they do care what they think, even if there isn't a specific issue in front of anyone at the moment.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman Pitt. Before we conclude, just stepping back, are there any other things you'd like to discuss, and specifically the SEC, the top concerns you think are facing the SEC right now, what the agency might be prioritizing that they aren't? If you had some words of wisdom for the regulators, if you were still there, what would those words be?
I often felt when I was chairing the commission that former SEC chairs should be perhaps seen but not heard. So it's not entirely clear that anybody would welcome hearing from me. I think these are very difficult times for the SEC. Dodd-Frank has put an incredible burden on the commission's shoulders. And I think that while they are approaching these tasks assiduously, they lack some of the critical resources they need, and that will raise additional problems for those who are going to have to comply with the rules that eventually are adopted. So I think the commission has been reorganizing itself. It is making itself far more efficient and far more business-like in how it approaches issues. It has a chief operating officer for the first time, which I think is a very sensible change. And I think that at least for those who are subject to regulations, they should keep in mind that this is a period of great government activism, and staying on top of proposals as well as making your voice heard in a constructive way is very, very important. There's a real opportunity to influence how the commission will resolve some of these very difficult issues.
Well, wonderful to hear from you, Chairman Pitt.
It was great chatting with you, Jim.
Thank you. Again, this is Jim Copeland. It's been a podcast with former Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman Harvey Pitt. Thank you for listening.